climate change the facts? Why climate models are failing, by Patrick J. Michaels. Patrick J. Michaels is the director of the Center for the Study of Science at the Cato Institute, Washington, D.C., research professor of environmental sciences at the University of Virginia from 1980 to 2007, author of Shattered Consensus, The True State of Global Warming, and Climate Coup, Global Warming's Invasion of Our Government and Our Lives. Onerous and ineffective policies related to greenhouse gas emissions, such as cap-and-trade schemes, taxes on extraction, or carbon taxes, have themselves extracted a very high political cost in Australia. Three national leaders in Australia, Malcolm Turnbull, Kevin Rudd, and Julia Gillard, were all removed, either by their own party or by the voters, because of failed climate change policies. Environmental policies are also critical issues in state elections, where only one state premier remains from the Labour Party. In the United States, 63 Democratic Party seats were lost in the House of Representatives in the 2010 election. Almost every close race was lost by a member who voted for cap and trade. In the Senate, which did not pass or even bring up similar legislation, every close race went to the Democratic candidate. Given that both houses had voted for the president's unpopular healthcare nationalization, the blame for the loss in the House of Representatives lies squarely with cap and trade. In Canada, a newly elected and popular government has basically shut down any significant global warming policies. Despite all of this, which is surely known to the political class, the current Australian National Government seems committed to yet another round of global warming-related policy. This chapter will demonstrate that such a dangerous political course is simply no longer justified by climate science. Indeed, if it ever was. It is hoped that those considering new policies may be moved by its contents. Scientific introduction. In its most basic form, science consists of statements of hypothesis that are retained by critical tests against observations. Without such testing, or without a testable hypothesis, Karl Popper stated that what may be called science is, in fact, pseudoscience. A corollary is that a theory which purports to explain everything in its universe of subject matter is in fact untestable, and therefore a pseudoscience. In climate, perhaps it is charitable to refer to untested or untestable climate model projections as climate studies rather than climate science. The popular literature is replete with stories relating all kinds of mayhem to climate changes induced by increasing the infrared absorption of the lower atmosphere, known colloquially and erroneously as the greenhouse effect. The chain of causation usually cited goes back to one of the very large number of general circulation climate models, GCMs, now in existence. Given that there are, at least in theory, only two major anthropogenerated alterations in the atmosphere used in climate forecasts, namely an increase in infrared absorption in the lower atmosphere from CO2 and other greenhouse gases, and an increased backscattering of incoming radiation from anthropogenerated aerosols, all subsidiary effects must derive from these two phenomena. There is one variable in GCMs that changes all the subsidiary phenomena, such as cloudiness, lapse rate derived precipitation, or changing intensity and distribution of the dynamic systems that initiate rainfall and snowfall. It is an average warming of the lower atmosphere and a related change in the vertical lapse rate. A peculiar phenomenon in modern climate studies is that cause and effect are not easy to parse, and in some instances, they are not even explored. In a prominent recent example, President Obama's science advisor, John Holdren, citing the work of Francis and Vavras, suggested that the cold and snow of the winter of 2013-14 in the eastern United States was caused by a warming-related modulation of the circumpolar vortex, fueled by declining Arctic sea ice. This was subsequently shown to enjoy no support in the observational data by Barnes and Ballinger et al. Holdren nonetheless persisted with this meme in support of President Obama's climate action plan. What is truly odd is that there is no comprehensive examination in the refereed literature of the behavior of the entire community of climate models. When it comes to their prime mover output, a warming of global average surface temperature. Our interest in this has been piqued by the pause in warming, in which annual data in the scientifically popular Hadcrut 4 temperature history of Maurice et al. Are now in their 18th consecutive year without a statistically significant warming trend in global average surface temperature. Hadcrut is the name given to the combination of the data sets of two organizations, namely the Hadley Center of the UK Met Office and the Climatic Research Unit, CRU, at the University of East Anglia. Additionally, over the last 30 years, 1984 to 2013, the suite of 108 climate model runs used in the 2013 compendium of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, produces an average surface warming rate of 2.6 degrees Celsius per century, while the observed value was 1.7 degrees Celsius, a considerable difference for so long a period. Materials and methods. We examined data since 1950 for the 108 model runs used in the Working Group 1 Science 2013 IPCC 5th Scientific Assessment, available from KNMI Climate Explorer. See climexp.knmi.nl. We calculated the model trends for periods beginning at 10 years, i.e., 2004 to 2013, 11 years, 2003 to 2013, etc., all the way back to 1951 to 2013. For each trend length, we ranked the 108 trend values from the individual model runs. From this ranked data set, we determined percentiles. Given the sample size, directly obtaining percentile rankings better characterizes and constrains the properties of the data than probabilities derived from the assumption of normality. Inspection shows that the data are not grossly non-normal, as do other similar analysis examining the collective trends from climate model projections. We calculated the average warming produced by the 108 models as well as the following percentile values: 2.5, 5, 95, and 97.5. The 5th and 95th percentiles are given as the light gray lines in Figure 1, while the broken lines are the 2.5th and 97.5th percentiles. The average is given by the solid gray line near the midpoint of the percentile bounds. We then compared these trends to the observed trends in the Hadcrut 4 temperature history. These are given as the large circles. Where they are not shaded, the observed trends are within the 95% confidence limits of the model ensemble. Where they are light gray, the observed trends are below the 5th percentile of the ensemble. And where they are black, they are below the 2.5th percentile. The results. The results are completely shattering for the ensemble behavior of the 108 model runs. Several items are worthy of note. Every observed trend from 1951 to 2013 to 2004 to 2013 falls below the model average. The observed trend initially falls below the 5th percentile trend 37 years ago, or in 1977, and remains there for every trend length through the end of the record. The observed trend initially falls below the 2.5th percentile trend 34 years ago, or 1980. Since 1980, there are only four trends between the 2.5th and 5th percentiles. If policies were based upon climate science rather than climate studies, this simple, straightforward analysis would spell the end of any onerous climate policy. However, While our similar studies can be scientifically cited, to date, there has been an understandable reluctance to publish this in the Tier 1 scientific literature, such as Nature or Science, as that would indicate a massive, unexplainable, and persistent failure of the studies driving global climate policy. Paltridge recently speculated that when this is ultimately permitted, the cost to all science, not just climate science, is going to be dear and lasting, much to the detriment of our society and our public policies. It will provoke serious doubt that the present incentive structure in science, which requires that the practitioners keep their problems important, has far-reaching and disastrous unintended consequences. Kuhn attempted to explain the reluctance of a scientific community to abandon a failing paradigm as a function of the profession, in which the vast majority of practitioners advance professionally by trying to explain minutiae or anomalies within the paradigm. Therefore, in science, novelty emerges only with difficulty, manifested by resistance, against a background provided by expectation. Initially, only the anticipated and usual are experienced, even under circumstances where the anomaly is later to be observed. It is noteworthy that Kuhn first wrote his manuscript in the late 1940s, which was prior to the completion of the large-scale transition of science to essentially a public-funded enterprise. Consequently, he does not explore how the need to keep public funds flowing through academia probably made paradigms more sticky than they already are. Additionally, Kuhn was encouraged in his work by his mentor, James Conant, Harvard's president and a major figure in the Manhattan Project, the largest public science venture at that time in history. The Manhattan Project and the Office of Scientific Research and Development were the prototypes cited by President Roosevelt when he requested the federalization of science in a 1944 letter to its director, Vannevar Bush. It is therefore hard to imagine that Kuhn had much of an incentive to note how massive public funding might have a less than salutary influence upon scientific progress. That was certainly not in the interests of his mentor or his employer. A problem that deserves much further investigation is how climate science could continue in its remarkable denial that the aggressive global warming paradigm has been shattered, with now 37 consecutive years of documented, systematic, model failure. Is an alternative paradigm developing? Beginning in 2011, an increasing number of papers and modeling experiments began to appear in the literature indicating, either from models or from historical observations, that the sensitivity of the paradigmatic family of GCMs is too high. Sensitivity is the ultimate amount of surface warming that is realized for a doubling of the ambient CO2 content from its pre-industrial background. This is nominally construed as a change from 300 to 600 parts per million by volume. Lindzen and Choi used discrete warming and cooling periods of the tropical ocean, along with outgoing radiation at the top of the atmosphere, as measured by two satellites, and concluded that the resultant temperature feedbacks to thermal changes in the ocean and outgoing radiation implied a lower sensitivity of temperature to long-wave, greenhouse, radiative forcing, perhaps because of negative feedbacks within the Earth atmosphere system. According to Lindzen and Choi, observational data imply that the models are exaggerating climate sensitivity. Schmittner et al. Combined large-scale temperature reconstructions from the last glacial maximum with various model simulations, which include changing CO2, and calculated a mean sensitivity of 2.3 degrees Celsius compared to the IPCC fifth assessment average of 3.2 degrees Celsius. More importantly, the probabilities of very large warmings are dramatically reduced. They conclude that assuming paleoclimatic constraints apply to the future, as predicted by our model, these results imply lower probability of imminent extreme climatic change than previously thought. While noting that the sensitivity is far from certain, Annan and Hargreaves used probabilistic estimates themselves rather than a uniform prior, subject to perturbation by multiple GCM runs, noting that the standard methodology has unacceptable properties that condition it to produce unrealistically high probabilities for large warming. By using the more realistic approach, the 95% confidence limit for a large warming dropped by one-third, and they noted that these results also impact strongly on projected economic losses due to climate change. Incorporating a prior probability distribution based on expert opinion, rather than the oft-used and ill-founded uniform distribution into a Bayesian analysis, Annan and Hargreaves find a median value for the equilibrium climate sensitivity of 1.9 degrees Celsius. Incorporating a Cauchy distribution for the Bayesian prior results in a median climate sensitivity estimate of about 2.2 degrees Celsius. Van Hatteren found, using a retrospective approach, a climate sensitivity of 2.0 plus or minus 0.3 degrees Celsius, and noted it is at the lower end of the range considered likely by the IPCC. In this, they were referring to the 2007 IPCC Fourth Assessment Report. The 2013 report reduces the lower limit from 2.0 to 1.5 degrees Celsius, with no best estimate. This will provide the IPCC with some cover when the low sensitivity becomes obvious, even to those currently defending the established failing paradigm. One of the most important papers in this tranche is that of Ring et al., if only because the fourth author, Michael Schlesinger of the University of Illinois, has long been an extremely vocal advocate for high-end sensitivity. By adjusting their model with observed temperatures, which includes much of the pause, they arrive at a sensitivity of 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius. While they claim that this is on the low end of the estimates in the 2007 IPCC's Fourth Assessment Report, it is in fact clearly beneath that. Yet another example of Kuhn's observation that what turns out to be obvious is initially ignored. Hargreaves et al. Used a new determination of the cooling during the last glacial maximum to derive estimates of the climate sensitivity. Their estimates used two different statistical techniques, one employing regression relationships between tropical temperatures during the last glacial maximum and climate model climate sensitivity, and another using a Bayesian approach, weighting each climate model based on how well it matches the new last glacial maximum data. The two methods produced very similar results, with a mean equilibrium climate sensitivity of about 2.5 degrees Celsius, with a 90% confidence range of about 1 to 4 degrees Celsius. Aldrin et al. Also fit model results to observed temperatures, but in addition included observed changes in oceanic heat content and found a mean sensitivity of 2 degrees Celsius, which is over 40% below the mean of the model family used in the 2013 IPCC report. Spencer and Braswell used a simple climate model to simulate the global temperature variations averaged over the top 2,000 meters of the global ocean during the period 1955 to 2011. They first ran the simulation using only volcanic and anthropogenic influences on the climate. They ran the simulation again, adding natural variability contributed by the El Niño-La Niña process. Then they ran the simulation a final time, adding in a more complex situation involving a feedback from El Niño-La Niña onto natural cloud characteristics. They then compared their model results with a set of real-world observations. They found that the complex situation involving El Niño-La Niña feedbacks onto cloud properties produced the best match to the observations, and notably, produced the lowest estimate for the Earth's climate sensitivity to CO2 emissions, a value of 1.3 degrees Celsius. Climate models which do not accurately recognize this feedback will produce climate sensitivity values from the doubling of the atmospheric concentration of greenhouse gases far in excess of this observationally determined value. Otto et al. Is highly significant because 15 of the 17 co-authors were also authors of the 2013 IPCC report. They acknowledge both the pause and recent heat uptake, and note that these yield a lower sensitivity than has been found in previous models. They prefer using the most recent decade because it contains more reliable baseline energy balance data, and they calculate a 5 to 95% confidence range of 1.2 to 3.9 degrees Celsius, and a mean sensitivity that is also more than 40% less than the average in the 2013 IPCC report. Why this was not also a conclusion of that report, given the position of so many of its authors, seems mysterious. Lewis, in a highly cited paper, turned a climate model to provide an optimal fingerprint to calculate the temperature sensitivity most consistent with the observed diffusion of heat through the ocean and changes in atmospheric transparency. Their 90% confidence interval is 1 to 3 degrees Celsius, virtually the same range found by Aldrin et al. Noted earlier. Lewis notes he used the same basic temperature statistics as did Aldrin. Masters, using the observed changes in heat content of the upper 2 kilometers of the ocean, along with temperature observations since 1950, argue that the model family employed in the 2013 IPCC report is too sensitive to changes from both warming greenhouse gases and cooling aerosol emissions. Their results suggest that the mean equilibrium climate sensitivity is around 2.2 degrees Celsius, while the average of the IPCC models is 3.2 degrees Celsius. Most recently, Lowell recognized that calculations relating human-induced changes in the energy balance with observed temperatures also yields the now familiar 2 degrees Celsius sensitivity, but that the temperature trends are also modulated by long-term natural oscillations, such as the Pacific Decadal Oscillation and the Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation. Removing these from the surface record and comparing them in a very straightforward relationship to anthropogenerated emissions yields the same sensitivity, but also increases confidence in that value, leading him to conclude that higher estimates derived from climate models are incorrect because they disagree with empirical estimates. Figure 2 graphically summarizes the various results in these papers, as well as the mean value and range of the family of climate models used in the 2014 IPCC report. It also summarizes the likely range of warming given in that report. Andrew Revkin, who follows global warming science for the New York Times, published that influential newspaper's first article on the emerging evidence for a lower climate sensitivity in 2013. In it, he noted that there was one study 10 years earlier that also projected warming that is consistent with the recent lower sensitivity results. However, Revkin chose not to specifically identify the authors, saying instead, "I can understand why some climate campaigners, writers, and scientists don't want to focus on any science, hinting there might be a bit more time to make this profound energy transition. There's also reluctance, I'm sure, because recent work is trending toward the published low-sensitivity findings from a decade ago from climate scientists best known for their relationships with libertarian groups." The unmentioned citation is the Michaels et al. 2002 paper. Conclusion. There is little doubt that the ensemble of climate models used in the 2013 IPCC report fails when normatively tested as a hypothesis concerning observed global surface temperature trends. Such a comprehensive analysis has been presented by the authors at scientific meetings with little substantive criticism, but this does not seem to be acknowledged by the larger community undertaking what now must be referred to as climate studies rather than climate science. The normative test indicates that when model output from the UN is examined retrospectively, the failure of hypothesis would have begun about 37 years ago. This seems like an inordinately long time for such a problem to go undetected, even stipulating that Kuhn's iconic model of paradigmatic science is applicable. However, There is a growing body of the refereed scientific literature that estimates, using largely independent techniques, that the sensitivity is lower than the mean in the model ensemble used in 2013 IPCC report. Meta-analysis of these new results have yet to be performed to see whether they, as an ensemble, are also consistent with observed trends. The failure of the models and the emergence of a new literature need to be acknowledged, as both of these will certainly be invoked in debates about climate change policy. These are particularly timely with regard to the governments of Australia and the United States, both of which have been dramatically changed by the imposition, or attempted imposition, of expensive and onerous climate policies. Climate Change: The Facts is published by Stockade Books. All rights reserved.